Good morning, Nach enthusiast. Welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the Perek Yud Dalad of Perek of Sefer Melachim Beis, the 14th chapter. And this is really going to be focusing on civil war and the reign of Amatziahu. Let's Amatziah of the south. So let's follow this through. We've spent the last chapter was talking about the north, Yehu and his descendants. We're now going to slip back downwards to the south. And we're now following the assassination of Joash of the south. His son rules in his place, and his name is Amatziahu. We're told about him that he assumed role of king at the age of 25, and he ruled for 29 years, which is a pretty long period for a king. We'll see that's going to be a little mottled when we get towards the end. We're even told his mother's name, which is Yehoadan. Okay. In fact, the Tanakh tells us that he was a very good king. He did what was Yashar in the eyes of God. He didn't remove the Bamois, the personal altars. But nonetheless, he was did very, very well, and he was a good king, which seems to be a beautiful thing. And what happens is that he actually went and killed those who were makim among his servants, those who were, we'll call it offenders. But he didn't kill their children because the Torah says, lo yumsu avos al banim, v'banim lo yumsu al avos. Children should not die for their parents' sin, and parents should not die for their children's sins. So he didn't kill their parents. What this means, basically, just on a pshat level before going further, is that, remember, his father, Joash, was assassinated. So that means to say he took care of those perpetrators, of those offenders. He killed them, but he didn't kill the children of those offenders because of the Torah precept. It is interesting that in general, that pasuk is a pasuk which has many levels of meaning. Chazal take it to mean that children cannot be killed but based on the testimony of fathers, and fathers cannot be killed on the testimony of children. But he took it kipshuta, the basic understanding, which is there's no intergenerational punishment, at least in the hands of Beis Din. And he upheld it for that. It is interesting that that is almost exactly what they did for him. Meaning, when these rebels killed his father, they didn't kill his father's son. And his father, so therefore, Amatziah kills them, but he doesn't kill their children. It seems what goes around comes around. Nonetheless, that the Torah emphasizes, the Tanakh emphasizes this particular point. While he's in the upswing, it actually turns out that he went and he was able to regain the territory from Edom. Edom is in the southeast of Israel, and kills 10,000 of their soldiers and captures a particular rock area, a particular mountainous area, which he ended up calling by the name of Yekosel till recently. Okay, that's the first section of the Perek. However, on his way back from war against Edom, so remember, he's reclaiming territories that were taken away from him, regaining control that was historically in the control of Yehuda, he comes back and he goes up to his neighbor in the north, Joash, or Yehoash of the north. Not to be confused with his father. Yes, it is confusing with these double names. But he turns to Yehoash in the north, who is the grandson of Yehu, and he says to him, L'chon Yisrael upon him. Let's go to battle. And Yehoash says to him, don't start with me, Amatziahu. He says, "What you're going to, you know, the thorn in Lebanon is going to go and come and is going to try to have you know marriage with the Chayas Hasadeh. You think that you have anything in my realm? You're not even my league to start with me." And Amatziah persisted, and Joash came down and brought his army and destroyed a lot of the southern kingdom. So this is civil war. This is the northern kingdom attacking the southern kingdom. And the southern kingdom, Yehuda, lost devastatingly. Amatziah was captured in Beit Shemesh, and Jerusalem the walls of Jerusalem were breached, and the coffers were emptied by the north, and Joash went back triumphantly. Amatziah was released embarrassingly, a terrible, terrible loss. In the meantime, what happens is that Amatziahu, after he carries on being the ruler afterwards, Joash dies pretty soon afterwards. But what we're told, unfortunately, about an ending, that there's a rebellion against Amatziahu himself. There's a rebellion in Yerushalayim, and he had to run as a refugee to Lachish, which is up the coast to the north, further out of Israel. And ultimately, his persecutors found him there and killed him in exile. You know, we're thinking, you know, Lahavdil, you know, we read in the news about, you know, sort of a Mossad operation in foreign territory. You know, this person, you know, Matthew did not have safety in exile, and his son was put on the throne. His son was a person by the name of Azariah. And one of the things that Azariah does is he actually conquers the area or builds up the area of Eilat, which is going to be an important city later on. So just a few things to think about when looking at this perek. It's from a helicopter view. There's just a bit of a sad perek in a number of ways. But one or two things just to be aware of. What is the relevance of him, naming this rock Yekosel? Why is it, do we need to know the name of every rock or every, victory, statue? So the Rashi actually tells us, if we look in Dira Yamim, you'll actually see that there's an added harmony to the story. And that is that Hashem made Edom want to rebel and send their armies against Israel. And because of that, it was their downfall. The people of Seir said that we should attack, and they attacked and they lost. So this was a place of what was called Kihu Shenayim, where Hashem gave us the sharpening of teeth. Why? Because that he made them walk into the lion's jaws in this particular episode, and they memorialized it by calling that rock Yekosel, where Hashem made us sharp because of this, of the way he arranged this battle. It's important to think about that. How many more memorials do we have that memorialize God's role in it? How many times do we say afterwards that it was us? Or how many times do we talk about God? This is what Rashi is bringing up when it comes to this battle. When looking at this perek as a whole, one of the things that one feels, the discomfort, I personally admit feeling when learning this perek, is it sounds like here you have a really good king, Amatsyahu, and he's fighting against a pretty bad king, Yoash, who we're told is a bad king in the previous perek, on a number of levels. Of course, he had good parts to him. But generally, the north is pretty bad and the south is pretty good. And here is Amatsyahu fighting with him and losing the battle and then getting killed. And you ask yourself, like, what's going on here? What are we missing in the story? So what we're missing in the story, as the Mefarshim point out, is that we really ought to read Divrei Hayamim and Melachim in connection with one another. We need to really read the two historical accounts of this period of time together, if we almost put them on the same light table and watch the shapes they make together through the X-ray, then we get a more of a coherent story. So the Malbim points out over here, as you read Divrei Hayamim later on, you'll notice that when Amatsyahu went out to battle, he actually wanted to hire, there were 100,000 soldiers from the north to come with him. But those soldiers went and raided, the soldiers from the north, instead of joining in battle, raided the unprotected land of Yehuda, killing 3,000 men and looting a number of cities. In response to that, Amatsyahu came back and said to Yoash, I take offense to that. That's not going to go unchecked. You've now disrupted our sovereignty. There's going to be repercussions for this. And that's why he went to battle. But why did this all happen overall, says the Malbim, is because when he went, as the Divrei Hayamim points out, when he went to battle with Edom, he didn't just win against Edom, he brought back the gods of Edom. Somehow this battle was a transformational point for Amatsyahu in a negative way. He won this battle and he felt that maybe he adopted or conquered or consumed their gods, and he went off the rails, unfortunately, in his own life at this point in time. Which is why Hashem allowed him into this tit-for-tat battle, which ultimately he lost. So this relates back to his assassination as well. Why was he assassinated? So the Malbim points out that it was in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was the seat of the Kohanim, who are the religious zealots. They are the people who want to protect the place of God. And when they saw that Amatsyahu returned from this battle change and saw the policies that Amatsyahu had in him, they in fact fought against him and tried to assassinate him, causing him to run to exile. The Malbim even goes so far as to suggest that maybe it was the Kohanim themselves who suggested that he go into this foolhardy battle against the north, and the north is more powerful than him, with the hope that this person, this transformed leader, who no longer had God as his first and foremost interest in life, would perhaps die in this battle. When that failed, he was embarrassed, and but he returned to Yerushalayim. They tried to persecute him himself, and he went into hiding in Lachish, and a number of years later they were able to really kill him. It is interesting that the Malbim points out that there's a parallel timeline here, which means that Azariah, his son, was somewhat on the throne in his absence, but couldn't fully assume the throne until Amatsyahu himself was murdered, which is why they had to reach him over there. So they were sort of waiting for this moment to be able to clean that slate, to be able to start again. And this is an interesting model where you see that this was actually an assassination which is not based on power or money, but rather on religious prerogative in order to be able to rectify what becomes the beginning of the Southern Kingdom going off the rails. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.